Sometimes life feels out of our control. We get stuck in trauma, old patterns, and change feels out of reach. Sometimes it feels like fate. We want to help you break out of old, unhelpful patterns and become healthier. We're Fate Resilience, taking control of the outcome.
With licensed therapists, Jennifer Oxford,
Taylor Madsen,
Haley Mayer.
So we're going to talk about individual types of abuse. So the first one that we're going to talk about is emotional abuse and what that means.
We're going to start with emotional abuse because all of the other kinds of trauma generally, or maybe every time, we'll see as we get to every podcast. I'm going to be learning as we go, I guess. Incorporate some kind of emotional abuse. The Gottmans, hallowed be their name. Oh my word. It's fun when I commit a little bit of blasphemy. Anyway, the Gottmans break emotional abuse down into six parts. Social isolation, sexual coercion, extreme jealousy, public humiliation, belittling or degradation, threats of violence or other acts that induce fear, so intimidation, and then actual damage or threats of damage to property, pets, or children.
I want to add, too, that sometimes emotional abuse is called psychological abuse. So if you hear that term, we're talking about the same kind of thing. So if someone says, I was emotionally abused, I was psychologically abused, I don't know of any difference. They're the same thing.
Yeah, the brain won't distinguish.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, sometimes people will refer to psychological abuse as like a scenario that's more like more thinking process, and emotional abuse is like trying to manipulate how you feel. So sometimes there is, like, I read some things of just some differences with that. In the end, it's the same thing essentially on our end, but sometimes just the way that they do it, you feel like something's more psychologically based if it's like attacking your thought process versus attacking how your emotions are emoting, right?
Yeah, we're gonna
group it together,
right? And we're starting with emotional abuse because it is often intermingled among other types of abuse, and so it's not important always to tell the difference between the two, but mm-hmm. to be aware that abuse is emotional and that does happen and how it happens. Yeah. So with the first kind, Taylor, that you talked about, what was it?
Social isolation.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what social isolation looks like. And even as we're talking about it, I have people I know who've been extremely socially isolated.
We've all worked with those kinds of clients.
Yeah. I think we've all had experiences in our own life,
too. I was just going to say, going through my Rolodex, like, oh, yeah, that's been me.
Yeah, and I mean, you don't have to say you've been in an emotionally abusive situation to have someone who's socially isolated you or tried to, right? That could even be, like, I feel like I'm way too loud. That could even be, like, the friend who, you know, is trying to isolate you from other friends, things like that. And it doesn't have to be, like, a continual long-term thing. It could be an instant situation, but I think we can all identify in some way with social isolation. But the difference between what we're talking about and emotional abusive social isolation is that they're doing it to cause issues, to cause detriment.
Social isolation, depending on the severity, the intensity, I guess those are the same word, can induce psychosis in anyone very quickly. Mm-hmm. That is why, depending on where you are in the world, but let's take here in the United States, depending on the state, you can't be in isolation in prison for more than 6 weeks, mm-hmm. Sometimes more than 4 weeks. You'll begin to see visual hallucinations. You'll begin to have auditory hallucinations rather quickly. For some, it's a few days. For some, it's a matter of hours. It's called prisoner's cinema. You start to have full-on conversations with other people. Some people will begin to self-harm because we are social creatures. We do not do well alone.
Mm-hmm. The other thing it does is it leads to this idea of dependence and control, right? So when people isolate you from other people, when someone isolates you from other people, we're looking at one of the core cruxes of self-compassion.
Sorry, that just sounded like horcruxes.
I apologize for laughing. Let me say that again.
No, it's not you. It's me. I apologize.
But We're looking at one of the core factors of self-compassion, which is common humanity. So when you're isolated, you cannot be around other people or around multiple other people. And so it's really hard to judge right from wrong. It's hard to judge normal from abnormal. And so it puts you at a higher risk of being manipulated, coerced, and highly dependent on the other person, and puts you more into this, definitely will move into a fawn state where I'm trying to make sure that the person who's isolating me is happy to keep myself safe. So those are some of the things that you'll see as the effects of.
It looks different though. I would say, like, having worked with different people who've been socially isolated, it can look sometimes like that person is trying to protect me. They're trying to do that. It can also look like that person who is the, we'll call it the instigator. They are saying you don't deserve to be around other people because of what you've done and because of how you are. So it can also look like, well, that person is angry and this is like their way of
punishment
or consequence, right, for my behavior kind of thing. And so they can often manipulate it. So social isolation can look very, depending on how that person is using it, it can come across in a couple different angles. So something to be aware of is that sometimes it is because, like, well, I was so offensive towards everyone else, and so I should be isolated, or I did make someone upset, so I should be isolated. And as opposed to another way of doing it, which is to say, like, I love you so much, I want you to myself, which I think we all see that as being like, oh, I would totally be more okay with that than someone trying to punish me. But I think when you're in that relationship, each person has their own flavor of emotional abuse.
We just came out. Things are different than they were in 2020. I'm going to just say that.
Yeah.
We were quarantined, locked down, depending on where you were in the world. Many people experienced that. And so we were socially isolated, certainly physically isolated. And many kids were doing school through an online presence. They were keeping in touch with their friends online. People were Marco Poloing, they were FaceTiming, talking on the phone, texting, what have you, and still not having that human connection face to face has taken a toll in the public. Anxiety and depression, domestic violence has been up. And then we're seeing really little kids are still having that toll on brain development, like we were talking about last week. Again, brain development can be taken care of. It's not fixed in stone, but social isolation is a really big deal. And then junior high, awful place, at least personally. So Rachel and I have known each other since seventh grade, my wife. And
we'll decide if we want to keep this in later.
You're going to want to after you hear this. Yeah. So Rachel had a nickname for me in junior high called My Size Taylor, because just around like a couple years before My Size Barbie had come out, I was the size of My Size Barbie. I was tiny in seventh grade.
That is cute, but not related to emotional abuse.
Isn't it?
No, it's not.
Oh, right. Back to junior high.
Good night, Rachel.
So junior high. So we just talked about physical isolation and then social isolation. And middle school and junior high is where most people experience something like this. You are still around people, right next to people. But then you can experience social isolation where people aren't talking to you, they're ignoring you, maybe they're ridiculing you.
Shun.
So, as parents, it's really important that we don't socially isolate our kids. We need to make sure that as part of their development, that we're letting them interact with other people outside of our home, that they're having that chance to do those things. And then I see in really unhealthy early, maybe it starts in junior high, but early friendship, sometimes when you have a friend who says you can only hang out with me and it's bad if you hang out with other people, these are kinds of things that I don't think people always intend to make bad, but they are not a healthy part of social development for people. So just be aware that we need a wide variety of social interaction in our life as part of just, like I said, this is part of self-compassion and social development.
The next part of emotional abuse would be sexual coercion. And when it comes to sexual coercion, I mean, first of all, I think Jen's pointing it out. Sorry, not because Maggie's like, I sense stress.
You're not going to get employee of the month again if you keep that up, Maggie.
So when it comes to sexual coercion, First of all, the big word is consent, right? That's what we base off of, knowing if it's coercion or not. I had a supervisor who honestly was great about explaining consent and said, unless it's a like a hell yeah and a high five, it's not consent.
Enthusiasm.
Yeah. Enthusiasm. And not even like, oh my gosh, I've always wanted to have sex with you, right? Sexual coercion is the opposite. It's the idea of, I'm going to get them to want to say yes. They didn't enter the room wanting to say yes. And so coercion is really highly correlated with consent in that sense, especially because when it comes to emotional abuse, sexual coercion does not just mean the physical act of forcing yourself upon someone. I'm trying to make this as appropriate as possible. But coercion, the reason we're calling it emotional abuse is if they are not coming into the scenario with that hell yeah, high five mentality of like, I want to be part of this experience with you, and you have to talk them into it. First of all, you're disregarding their ability to consent. You're disregarding that they are allowed to think that they don't want to be with you and that they cannot want to be with you and still like you.
Yeah. What are the consequences of saying no?
Yeah. And if there is a consequence, meaning if I say no and they're going to withhold communication from me, if I say no and they're going to treat me differently, and then I say, okay, fine, I'll just do it, that's not actual consent. That is actually, in situations like that, they would qualify that as sexual abuse and things like that in that scenario. And so the reason why coercion is such a big thing to be aware of is that, first of all, I don't think anyone in a healthy relationship wants their partner to feel like they can't say no if there's something that they're needing to do for themselves, for safety, for comfort, for just, it's just not the right time, right? So to get some, I know they really want to, that's the phrase that I hear a lot. Well, they were really wanting to, they are just nervous about it. And I was just helping them get over their anxiety. No, you're not validating the meaning they're having in that moment. So sex coach, that's a part that I'm really passionate about.
Yeah,
so
it's not just a hell yes and a high five. It is continued enthusiastic participation.
Mm-hmm. And I like that definition because it's really important to realize that in the fond response, which we've talked about, making people think you want to do what they said is part of a fond response. So it's really important that we know that in extreme emotional abuse, you might see people who are being forced to even act out that hell yeah and high five, but that does not mean that it wasn't abuse. And we're going to go into more sexual abuse later, but I just want you to think about, am I allowing them that room for consent? And am I really encouraging people to have their own power over their body and to that option of saying yes or no? Mm-hmm.
The third one, extreme jealousy. Jealousy is often used for people that don't feel secure in their relationship. They don't feel secure in themselves, going back to our attachment episodes that we finished a few times before, to validate themselves or to feel a sense of importance. Mm-hmm. And so, or they, again, go back to insecurity, that they feel threats where there are no threats.
Mm-hmm. Oh, notice that it's extreme jealousy. Having a little bit of a jealousy, it's fine. Like, we all have jealousy in some way, but it's when we have gone past the threshold of what is, I don't want to say normal, but healthy, and noticing that, it's when Taylor's explaining that, just notice like extreme jealousy. Because when it's just something that's like, I have some jealousy and I'm working on it and it's okay, that's a me problem. But if I'm using that that word coercion, right? If I'm using it to manipulate someone else, that's gone outside the bounds of within my realm and into someone else's.
So let me give an example, because I think I love what Haley says about normal jealousy is a you problem. Extreme jealousy is when you create, then when you make it someone else's problem. So I'll give you an example of a young adult teenage relationship where...
It's meant to last. Just kidding.
So the couple says that they love each other. They both have significant attachment trauma. They might not see each other and they think, why are you standing next to this person? So you have to stay on the phone with me till 3 a.m. and fall asleep with me every night. Otherwise, I think you're cheating on me. And then we're going to have a fight about you cheating. And so that type of jealousy where your behavior has to manage my jealousy, and it goes into unnatural things that interrupt your life. So your school attendance or your work attendance, your sleep, your eating habits, your social habits, being able to go to normal social activities, right? It's okay if you say, hey, I don't want you to go on a date with someone else if we're in an exclusive relationship. That's not jealousy. That's a boundary. But if you say, I don't want you going to hang out with anyone else because I'm in love with you, that's weird, people. It's just weird.
Or I don't
want... And teenagers, stop staying up till 3 a.m. on the phone together. That is not healthy.
Okay. There's her soapbox.
That's right.
No, I think that you're mentioning something called, we would call it addictive love too, when it comes to relationships. I think we talked about this a while back with attachment.
We did.
Yeah, it's just this idea of, you know, I have no boundary of myself. I've now interfered with other people's boundary. Because I think an important thing when it comes to jealousy too is that you, it's your thing to have some jealousy. But when it becomes something that is then dictating what the other person has to do, that's definitely when we hit that extreme. So, and I think we've hit a lot of this already with our attachment episodes, but just being aware of it's crossing the line to, like, say you can't be around anyone of the, let's say they're a heterosexual person, the opposite gender. You can't even be in the same room as another woman. That's,
or your preferred gender.
Or whatever it is that you're doing. I think it's one of those things where it's looking at it and saying, like, that's extreme. And that's you also having a really unsafe, unhealthy boundary that you feel like is a healthy one, but it's not.
And I would add that having to manage physical safety, maybe they say, well, I've never hit anyone, but you're afraid if I cross this line, if I did spend time with somebody, that could lead to some kind of physical danger. That would be extreme jealousy too.
Or emotional danger, right? They're going to berate me. Like I've worked with couples in the past where it's not, they're worrying so much. Sometimes it has crossed into physical aggression, but they're worried, you know, the minute they see that I'm coming out of work, they're picking me up because my car's in the shop, and they see me walking out with so-and-so, who's someone who it would be someone they're jealous about. And they're just saying, like, have a good day. And I'm like, hey, you too. Bye. I know I'm going to get in the car and they're going to yell at me. Right. And they're going to yell and they're going to give like an awful tone. That's also just as much of a threat as physical.
Gives you that. Absolutely. Pit in your stomach.
Okay, so after jealousy, what do we have?
Public humiliation, belittling, or degradation.
Oh, those are all really, some of those are big words. What does degradation mean?
Well,
taking someone down a notch or several.
Yeah, let me give an example. Okay, recently I've been on Facebook because I'm a human being and have my, you know, things I like to do. And there are some people I've seen that, whether it be through friends of mine or whatnot, when there's a separation or a divorce or a breakup, they will publicly post info about the other partner and saying, like, I want all my friends to not be friends with them anymore because of they did this, they did that. That's pretty public. And you can say, does anyone really look? I would say just in general, public means it's outside of your home, that anyone who's not living within your home can have access to that information. I don't know if that's the real definition, but that's what I identify it as. So a text even to the neighbor, like, that's public stuff there.
I also think this is more what comes to mind for me in addition to that, but this is what usually comes up for me is you think about that person that is just tearing into someone in front of others, just face to face, or giving them a dressing down. They are just trying to make them feel like they're 3 inches tall. That kind of yelling or screaming that makes your blood run cold. And it doesn't even have to be yelling or screaming. They are just saying things that are out of line. Like when you yell, like, term that's become popular over the last few years, like a Karen.
I was thinking that too.
Yeah, just berating someone.
Poor Karens who are nice. That's what I keep thinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but I like what you said. It doesn't have to be yelling. It can be humiliating somebody, making that you the subject of jokes. So making jokes at your expense, even though Taylor's okay with it, not everyone is okay with it, and it can actually be really painful.
Are you saying that if I do all of my trauma work that I haven't finished, I won't be okay with it someday?
We can address that in your individual sessions. asking them to do something uncomfortable or inappropriate, that would all be public degradation. Right.
Yeah. So like we talked about in the shame episode, embarrassment is that thing that this happens to everyone. It passes quickly. Humiliation is this is being done to me. And it is making us feel bad about ourselves as a person. And it is not going to pass quickly.
This is the typical definition of when we think of persecutor. This is the typical thing of what we think of. It's throwing shame on someone else and essentially saying, now deal with it kind of thing.
Well, it's interesting because some people say, well, I'm just being direct or blunt. And I will just put out there that direct and blunt is not the ideal conversation style for anyone. That's not necessarily what we're looking for. So, for example, you know, as a child, I was overweight. So calling me fat was true, direct and or blunt. And emotional abuse. So I think it's really important that we understand.
I'm sure you were totally unaware, and that was the first time that you had ever thought of that.
Yeah, I didn't know. I had no idea. But I think
you bring up a good point with that, too, though.
The point of that was only ever to be cruel.
Huh? Yeah. Well, the point of it also, though, let's be very clear. Your reason for doing that is – that was me – your reason for doing that is for yourself and yourself only and the satisfaction that it'll bring by saying that. If your reasoning for going up to little Jen, who's having some weight difficulties and feeling really overwhelmed and being like, Jen, I see you. I see that this is what's going on. This is between you and me. Let's talk about it. That, therefore, it's also not public. So that's a big differentiation, right. But that is for support for the person. So if you are recognizing, there was this one video I saw of this lady who the guy walked in front of her with a bike and he had a dog and you could tell he probably wasn't thinking. And she pulled the bike over and literally started yelling at him in front of the group and being like, you're entitled. You're this, you're that. Now, if she were to go up to the guy and be like, I don't think you realize, like, I almost hit you and your dog. Like, I don't want to hit you. Can you just make sure you check before you come out across? But because she was doing it for the group mentality, but then also to make herself feel better, 100% being more of an emotional abuse rather than actual helping the scenario.
And I like that because as we just talked about in the drama triangle, that's instead of being like your own hearer or a persecutor, you're moving into a coach. And again, you're not the appropriate coach for everyone. I don't know if we said that. So it would be somebody wants you to coach them and you're willing to align with their goals.
Yeah.
This is a follow-up.
Coaching isn't that you have good advice to give someone. Unsolicited advice is always criticism.
Well, it's all unsolicited advice is so that I can give it to them, not because they need it. Like, again, what is my purpose of doing it? Is it so I can tell them, or is it so that they can have something that's helpful? If it's for me to tell them because I want to know I told them, 100% self-serving.
Even in session, I'll ask people's permission before I give them advice, which a therapist rarely does. And they're coming to me, paying me, and I still ask permission.
And again, I think we talked about it, but name calling. This is one to be aware of because some people think name calling is joking. If the person doesn't share your sense of humor, calling them a name is a type of public humiliation.
It's certainly belittling, yeah.
Yeah.
So the next one after that is a threat of violence.
Or acts that induce fear, right. Intimidation.
Mm-hmm. I like that you say that because there are a lot of acts that you are not verbal, right? So raising a hand if you've been hit before can feel like that's an emotional abuse. I'm trying to like get you to just cower at my very hand or something like that. That's emotionally abusive, even if you never laid hands on somebody.
It's inspiring that fear of what if, what could happen. And if you haven't clearly identified the boundary, by you raising your hand, you've already gone past the boundary. If you've said even like, I would never hurt anyone. By raising your hand, that's the beginning steps of it. Therefore, or even just walking towards someone in an aggressive manner, that's also just as much inspiring fear, even though you're not promising to do anything.
I think all three of us have seen a lot of emotional abuse and control being sought through posturing and just aggressive behaviors. And in doing that, it does elicit a fear response. And because of that, it is something that we're responsible for being in check with when we're emotionally intelligent beings. We should not be doing those things. And we should be aware of how our physical behaviors are affecting people. I know that when I was a kid, you know, we played that game where a sibling, you would be like, I'm not touching you, but like get your finger as close to somebody's face. Technically, that is a threat of touch. And it is not appropriate to just say, I'm not touching you, but I'm totally making your whole system aware I could.
I used to be a therapist in a state prison. And the term we would use when people are posturing is feathering up, kind of like peacocks or other birds trying to make themselves look bigger. And two guys would be slouching, walking. And then for some reason, they'd catch each other's eyes and then slowly start to stand up straighter and puff their chests out. And before long, by the time they got to each other, they'd be in a fight.
Yeah, it's because
that's amazing that they were communicating without words. I think there was a Disney song about that.
Yeah, there's many a Disney song.
Sorry, I had to think. I was going through my catalog.
But I think it's good to... Again, we're not saying violence itself, it's just the threat of violence is what can be leading to it.
And we are going to talk more about physical violence in another episode, but we want to talk about the emotional abuse of the threat.
Mm-hmm. So then, of course, we get to actual damage of property, hurting pets, threatening to hurt children, threats of hurting children and pets and property.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
So let's give an example for that one. So if I'm really mad at you because you didn't do the dishes, so I go and break your favorite toy to punish you, that would be emotionally abusive. Mm-hmm. Right? If I'm jealous and I break your phone, that is additional emotional abuse. So if I key your car or take a baseball bat to it, that is emotionally abusive. So I think a lot of things that come up in some country songs, I know, but in general, those kinds of things are again, that's emotional abuse to damage someone's property or objects that are sentimental or of value to them.
There's also something to be aware of too, of when you were damaging like someone who's handicapped and their way of being able to live and their way of being able to move or communicate, you actually go above emotional abuse and you start going into some other different types of more serious abuse as well. So you might see it as, oh, I just broke his cane, or I just broke their wheelchair, or I just broke their, sometimes the verbal processing systems and things like that. But if you actually do that to someone who is handicapped and they need those things to be able to function, then you actually go past, I'm not going to say just emotional abuse, but you go past that one level and you actually go into many other ones that are extremely detrimental and also extremely able to go to court. Not that any of these things that the emotional abuse can't go to court, they all have their ability to go so, but damaging of property, I think sometimes people minimize what it is of, I just damaged that. But if you go into that line, it can actually become a lot messier than what people actually realize will happen. So just things to be aware of when, if those things are also happening to you, if your partner is, they just broke this, but if that's something you need to function, that's actually a lot more than just, oh, it's emotional, you know, we'll go through it.
Sometimes that's used to do the social isolation that they will sabotage someone's car. They will, take out the spark plugs, or I'm not going to list more things. You're not getting ideas from this podcast.
Well, not only that, but like just in general, like I think if anything can be done, it will be done by people who are wanting to pursue harming others. And so it's just a simple matter of, you know, being aware that all actions have a consequence in some way.
So did we get through all six?
Yep.
Okay, so I want to shift a little bit to some awareness that I think all of us have as part of being trauma-informed, right? So one of the things we do is we sometimes actually inadvertently make things worse because we don't understand the signs of when somebody has been emotionally abused. So some things that you might see in child, adults, peers, partners that are signs that they've been emotionally abused that sometimes make us very... sometimes we think it's purposeful, and I won't say it's never purposeful, but just be aware, is that if somebody is not confident and doesn't feel secure in themselves and has a lot of anxiety, that can be a sign they experienced some emotional abuse. Struggling to control their emotions, if they have a trigger response or they react very easily, that can be a sign. Actually, if they make mistakes in relationships, that can often come from emotional abuse. So if you've experienced that and you're saying, I have a really hard time even just having a healthy relationship, that's true. And then what I would call, what was the term I used to use? Social dismaturity. So was the nice way of saying acting younger than your age. Can be
social
one of those
immaturity
things. Immaturity, but I called it dismaturity because I like to make up words.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay.
Hey, Taylor gets to quote facts, I can make up words.
We all have our place.
but just these are signs of something that might be going on that actually are a request for more compassion rather than more criticism.
So if any of these things feel familiar or listening to this is giving you a pit in your stomach, that's a really good idea and sign to seek out therapy. Mm-hmm. If you need help finding therapy, please reach out to us. We can help you find a therapist close to you or any other resources that would be helpful. Even if you didn't get that pit in your stomach and it doesn't sound familiar, this was probably a really heavy podcast episode to listen to. So please take extra care to take care of yourself. Pay attention to your body and what you might need.
A couple things, if somebody reveals to you that they've been emotionally abused, just to pay attention to, or if you realize that you've been emotionally abused, it's important to listen carefully, tell them it's not their fault, take it seriously, don't belittle it, do not confront the alleged abuser, that doesn't help, that's drama triangle stuff, and then report it to somebody who can help. So sometimes if it's something where you have some danger, you can start to reach out to domestic violence advocates if it's that type of situation. Talking to your therapist. I've had people come to me and say, hey, my friend's going through this and I'm a little bit worried, and I can give them referrals for how to help their friend, or, you know, tell their friend they need to see a therapist. So just to know that if that comes up, those are some of the things that you should do. Please do not confront anyone's abuser. It's not safe for you or them.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please feel free to rate, subscribe, and review. And if you want to find us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Fate Resilience. We'd love to hear from you.